From cradle to grave, every moment of your life is one word after another, overlapping all the words from all of those who've crossed your path in a never-ending cycle of tale and experience. The concept is simple. The guest chooses the theme, a coin is flipped, and the winner is the first to tell a story based on their chosen theme. The loser gets to share a second. There are no prizes, no contests, no rules, and no boundaries. Just a few minutes spent exchanging the narrative from moments of our own human existence. From time to time, when life gets too busy and I haven't had an opportunity to book a guest, I'll go ahead and read you something of mine. Welcome to Tell Me a Story. The Long Longing, Chapter 3. Life is nothing more than a collection of random incidents, thoughts, and statements. Listen to the ebb and flow of all the things that happen around you, the people you know, the people you care about. Listen to them talk about their own lives, their stories. Everyone has a story to tell, and most people have more than one. Stories are a better window to the soul than eyeballs. Stories have words. A gateway into the mind of a person, their conscience, their true being. A look into their dreams, how they think, what they really want to be. The words people use, the order that they use them in, is far more telling than any study in body language. And every lie is surrounded by an aura of truth. And as such, every truth is shiny with the mists of embellishment. Spook. They called me Spook back then. It was an odd little nickname cooked up in the head of a combat veteran who found my ability to predict conflict and motive across nearly any conceivable metric spooky. People are people, no matter what the language. It wasn't spooky, it was just a goofy parlor trick. It was a Thursday. These things always happen on a Thursday. There was a certain heat in the air, and I was being dragged into it after all the work I'd done to keep my apartment cool. My buddy Dave, whom you called Danny for some reason, had burst into my room to drag me down to the corner bar. All you do is sit up here and play with your fans, Spook. Well, Todd in here. Well, if you never leave your room, you'll never get laid. And if you never get laid, you will never be happy. I don't need sex to be happy, Dave. Yes, you do. I muttered something about kinetics and thermodynamics and force temperature reduction being of paramount importance to woman wooing. And Dave just gave me a blank look. Look, you can't talk a woman into bed if it's too fucking hot to breathe, I said. Totally irrelevant, he shot. If you don't have a woman, you don't need all these fucking fans. Unless, of course, you are concerned with your own creature comforts, and that is just completely selfish, Spook. Now put some pants on. We're getting liquored. It was a little past 1 in the afternoon. Dave insisted on drinking until 5 or so. I dragged us over to the coffee shop for a quick sober up and maybe off to a movie.
How come we're going to Jed's?
It just seems like the thing to do, buddy.
Can't argue with that goddamn logic.
You're too drunk to argue, let alone fucking walk.
Go to hell.
The coffee shop, Jed's. It's where I worked, and it was a mecca to me. You know, every time I move to a new town, the first thing I find is a coffee shop to call home. Then I find some place to live close to that coffee shop. Finding an apartment just down the way from Jed's was almost too perfect. Getting a job there, that was pretty lucky. You know, on a busy night, that place was completely overwhelming, and it rarely got busy more than 2 nights a week. So Dave and I were sitting at the bar at Jed's. Dave was making tiny strangled noises, and I was committing sugar murder on a cup of coffee.
Oh, good Christ, Dave slurred. Why don't you have a little coffee with your sugar?
You know, if you say that one more time, Dave, I will beat the living shit out of you.
Fair enough.
Dave was pleasantly shit-faced, and I was drinking my far-too-sweet coffee that was cold enough to be lukewarm, but not yet tepid. That's my favorite temperature. And that was right before I saw you walk in. It was that Thursday evening. And it was that certain heat in the air. Details. So I'm sitting at the north end of the bar as it turns to the east. And I was facing south looking at the door. My back to the north. Dave was sitting next to me facing west back to the east. We were at the corner of the bar. Behind the bar, working the 3 to 11 shift, was Mike. Mike was wearing his typical baggy overalls and a tie-dyed shirt. And on top of his head was a colorful knit Rasta hat called a Tam, I think, that held his unwashed blonde curls inside its, I assume, fragrant knots. Mike was a very white Rasta from New Jersey that had changed his name sometime in his sophomore year of college to Alhambra from Smith. Mike was washing an infinite amount of glassware. The two TVs were on over the other ends of the bar, and Dave and I were watching The Chase with Charlie Sheen. It's a horrible movie, but it had this saving grace, saved the entire film. Right there in the end credits when Sheen did Robert Duvall's speech from Apocalypse Now, dressed in clown white and a ruffled collar. Dave and I were laughing hysterically at this last bit when the door opened and sucked the air right out of my lungs. An imagined silence filled the room. The world slowed to 4 frames a second, slow motion, and there you stood. Frame by slow-moving frame clicked by. Slow, slow, slow. Time was silently screaming to a stop. My heart started to beat really fast, and my lungs pretended to scream for oxygen and for me to release the stale cigarette smoke that filled my insides. I was woozy in the head. These feelings echoed up through my libido. I remembered the sound of your breathing from days before as you slept, totally dressed, absolutely innocent, while I worked on your computer. Your footfalls were loud as thunder, bang and boom. You looked behind you wearing a big smile, like a shampoo commercial slow-mo. Dave slapped the back of my head and the world sped up like a starting pistol. It started with my cough. Breathe, shithead. I'm just having a vision, Dave. You're having a seizure, it looks like. Well, Jesus, dude, look at her.
I have.
And?
And what?
Well, she's the one I was telling you about. And here we go again.
Ah, shit.
Dave laid his head back down on his arms. A few minutes later, Dave lolled his semi-sober head at me and back to you and following my gaze until I gave him a case of the giggles. Someone you were there with looked over at me, whispered in your ear, and she giggled herself. Dave slowly looked back to me and smiled a sad little smile. We exchanged that look that men have that speaks volumes, the silent secret language that men speak in times when speaking isn't necessary. Or isn't allowed, or isn't appropriate, or doesn't work. Dave and I share a rapport I've really only had with a select few people, and it's the way those few, those happy few who were raised inside the shackles of religion and the military, but who shucked off our restraints in lieu of a grim, gray, bitter presence without the security blanket of a peaceful afterlife. We who wander in a theological haze, embraced in the violence of our upbringing. We who communicate and love each other without the benefit of a church social, but who embrace the violence of day-to-day life as though that were living. We who blindly trod through the wonderland of decadence and sin, flippant in our distrust of all things organized. And we who live within the bonds of our own rules and our own morals. And I looked at Dave again, and that moment ended. You threw me a brief wave and turned away so fast I thought maybe you hadn't actually recognized me. But it was a Thursday, and Thursdays have a certain malevolent magic to them. Part of my brain thought you were just fucking with me. Your eyes were white, shocking white, surrounding the deepest, blackest brown. The entire unit frames artistically with your black eyeliner. And you were wearing a semi-tight white Gap t-shirt that rode above the top of your very faded, almost white blue jeans. You wore black combat boots. You were a vision. I watched you laughing with these people that I instinctively felt were not your friends. Your laugh was just a little too loud, a little too forced, and your eyes just a little too tight. A perfect match for the forced, weird smile you were wearing. Your eyes had a hardness, a tension that spoke of mild mistrust. You looked pained and hurt. Like the memory of past pains unknowingly written all over your entire body language that night. It was a Thursday. I needed to know your story more deeply than I knew from the casual visits I'd spent visiting the smoke shop where you'd worked. It was a Thursday. Now, you were like this on and off throughout our brief affair. When I'd reach a hand to touch you, you'd flinch away just long enough to decide whether or not there was going to be pain involved. Most times you'd warm to the touch, and sometimes you'd retain the taste of your fear and you'd start an argument. And that was life with you, ever changing, ever challenging. You know, though, that for all that fear you held, it's a wonder you never trusted me. Oh, danger. That's what I called you, remember? Danger. You were such a vision that night and every other night. So different from the girl I knew during the day when I worked and when you worked three doors down. That night, though, you held my heart and you didn't once look in my direction. You knew I was there and you knew I was looking at you, and I knew that I'm starting to make you uncomfortable, and I'm sorry about that still, but I couldn't look away. And you didn't look at me because you're strong, because you're independent, because you didn't want to feed the ego of some overgrown fucking gorilla who couldn't take his eyes off you. You didn't look at me because you needed me to know. Spook. Dave tapped me on the shoulder. You've been staring holes in her for over an hour, and she hasn't even looked this way, pal. Let's give it up. We can go home. Dave.
Yeah?
That woman is about to turn around and look at me. Give me a tiny, tight little smile, a shy little smile, and then I believe she will fall madly in love with me. And you turn just then and saw me looking at you, and you smiled slightly and shyly. And I loved you more in that moment than I've loved anything else. And it's strange the way a random stab in the dark can work out. This is how I got my nickname. I whispered, "I think I love you." And you saw me do it, and you blushed, and you turned away. "Okay, Dave, we can go now." Dave moved very slowly.
How in the fuck did you know she was going to do that?
Yeah, just a certain kind of magic. There was a bright, golden laser beam of light blasting through a tiny split in the curtain I had hung above my window. Every window had a curtain. Sunshine was not allowed. I had finally gotten all of my fans in the proper working order the afternoon of the day you spent your first night awake and aware in my cluttered and formerly super hot home. I remember you lightly mocked me for the messy state of my mind as it represented itself in the disorder of my place, and I was embarrassed. You laughed lightly, still uncomfortable with all of this, this me you were experiencing. Your controlled terror lit your face beautifully. I touched your arm, asking you to sit so that we could talk a bit more before the night got a little too late. You wasted no time at all asking me every shade of personal question imaginable. I didn't realize it at the time, but really, all you were doing was geared at keeping me talking so that I wouldn't have a chance to ask you anything personal. You were always very good at that. You could turn any talk, any discussion, any argument away from yourself and unleash the hounds of your anger upon the souls of the fool who dared to equivocate with you, always so defensive. I mean, so was I. And I nervously asked if you'd like to watch a movie, listen to the radio, play a CD. I could play some guitar, we could eat a sandwich, get some coffee, see my etchings. You giggled at that. Read some shitty poetry I wrote in elementary school or college. Do some push-ups, rappelling, bungee jumping, spelunking, or anything that you could come up with to do. So you kissed me. You kissed me. There we sat, 1 foot 3 inches apart on my sorry excuse for a sofa, and I asked you a meandering, pedantic, open-ended question. You grabbed me by the ears, and you kissed me. The feel of your lips against mine, in the very tenderness and passion that kiss possessed, there was a test of will and a test of strength. A fight for the dominance between our mouths? A certain eternal struggle that neither of us could ever win. With the simple meeting of our mouths, we began a rivalry that would bloom from the deep, hidden places in the far reaches of our minds and would consume, for a time, the very fiber of our beings. There was a separation then, and it all happened so fast, so incredibly fast, and there was this pain when the kiss I hoped would last forever was taken from me, and I had a shiver. It was weird. I fell into your eyes, and you jumped into mine, and we saw each other. I had the look of wow, and you, as I recall, had the look of oops. And that look lasted for a short eternity before a mad scramble to undress in a brief and comic chaos ensued. You fell into my arms, and we took up the fight again before I found, for that time, some taste of paradise. That's what I thought. So there we were. There was a bright golden haze screaming through a tiny split in the curtain. And you were lying across me, and your hand was on my chest. And I took my eyes away from the golden sliver upon the wall, and I smiled at your sleepy face. You must have felt me looking at you, and you stirred momentarily before coming half awake. Your eyes found the sliver, which you studied before speaking. Your thoughts, are they all dark? I guess so, I answered. I've never really thought about it. Why are your eyes so sad? Now, that was a question that came totally out of the fog. It was like a weird verbal punch in the kidneys. I just never managed to keep a hold on happiness, I guess. I figure it's just my little burden to bear. Do I make you happy, Spook? Well, yeah. You do. Very, very happy. Keep in mind, this was our first night together. I had no idea where the hell this was coming from. Then, what's with the curtains, you asked? Why do you need to block out the light if I make you very, very happy? Well, shit. There was a question that made no sense whatsoever. This was only the second time you'd been to my place. So out of my mouth fell this. Someday, I started, seeing the train wreck ahead and unable to stop myself, when you leave me, it'll break my heart, and I'll use a dark room to heal. Holy shit, were you pissed? Your face came alive with anger, illuminated by a violent rage that I knew at that moment I'd hit something very deep inside you, and I'd placed my foot resolutely in my mouth. You sprang from the bed and stood looking right through me, your nakedness and anger seemingly so together, so meshed, quite beautiful and dangerous at the same time. Jungle Cat, you began to sputter. You were so mad you couldn't speak. Your clothes were on, and you were out the door before I could even think to apologize for what I hadn't really attended as flippant or accurate. I didn't know. But when I look back on this incident, I'm convinced that I hit a button. I touched a demon. You were angry, I think, that you'd been discovered, that your habit had been spoken aloud, and your brain wouldn't tell you why, though you were so very, very pissed at me. 2 weeks later, I touched my mouth to you and felt you moan. I couldn't hear anything. Your thighs were clamped to the side of my head so tight it felt like I was underwater. The oneness I was feeling with you at that moment was quite intoxicating, that I'd never forgive myself if I didn't please you. I kissed you where you liked it. My hand touched you where you liked it. And I needed your calves just the way you like. And I tasted that sweet and beautiful smelling you. Now, with you, I couldn't remember at that point in my life ever having been caught up in moments like this with any other woman. I held tight to you as you shivered and fought and bucked. And I tasted you with a junkie frenzy. And when I felt you go, I needed to be inside you more than I needed to breathe. I pulled myself up until we were face to face, and things happen as they will. I came with you that time. I could feel the heady spin of orgasm as I felt myself go soft inside you. I started to pull from you, and you stopped telling me to stay. You bit my ear very, very hard and started moving your hips ever so slightly. The muscles that surrounded me began to flex with a slow, strong rhythm. And bewildered, I felt myself begin to acclimate to the situation. With my ear still clamped between your teeth, you spun me until you rode on top. Then your hips moved back and forth, grinding bone against bone with this bittersweet pain. And you bucked harder and harder. You placed my hands upon your breasts, and you bit my ear harder and harder. And I felt the skin break with a pop. Pain, this sweet pain, and you moving faster and faster until I came again, and you came again, and then again. And I spun you on your back and pulled myself out, and clamped my mouth onto you, and inhaled the scent of you, and you came again, and then again. My hair was wrapped around your hands, and you pulled, and I stopped. I didn't want to stop. And I pulled myself up to your face, and you crushed me with a kiss. You killed me, you whispered, breathing hard into my very bleeding ear. You killed me. I love you, I said. You killed me, you said. Well, I'm very sorry. And we laughed, lying there inside my wind tunnel of an apartment, feeling the air as it dried our sweat against our reddened skin, and we blissfully fell asleep, wrapped in the smell of each other, there on the floor. Somewhere in the night, we ended up just crawling back to bed, and there I was lying. Your back was pushed against my side, and I could feel the furnace of your sleep heat. Somewhere on the outside of my thoughts, I could hear a faint whistling, almost like a memory. The tune was very familiar. I took my mind from the memory of the night before and shut my eyes, disrupting their survey of the ceiling, and concentrated on the spirit of the tune. It was Dave. He was wandering around outside in the hall. He wasn't usually this considerate, though. I guess he knew I had company, or who the company was. If he'd been at all curious, he'd have danced in and woken the both of us. That's when I recognized the tune. From the halls of Montezuma, the tune went to the shores of Tripoli. Now, I'd known this song since childhood, and I'd sung this song to Dave 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks every summer for years. Dave, I figured, was restless and probably wanted to talk. I very softly whistled back the next line to let him know that I was on my way. We will fight our country's battle. Over land and air and sea! Dave sung out joyously right outside my door. You, of course, began to stir, and I began a losing battle trying to suffocate my laughter. When your eyes opened, I started laughing very loudly, and you gave me a very confused look until I could finally stop laughing and tell you what the hell Dave had just done. Then we moved on to us. I feel like I got hit with a Mack truck, you said. So, is that a good feel or a bad feel? It's a good feel. It's a very good feel, you said. I drew you to me, laid my head against your chest. I do think I love you, I said. You do? Yes, I think I love you very much, I said. Do you love me enough to run down the street and get me a latte? You asked. That's a lot of love. Yeah, you said. Yeah. So you don't love me that much? Yeah, I probably do. Really? Maybe. That's what I said. Maybe I love you, you said. Then maybe I ought to go get a latte. I jumped out of bed, started pulling on my pants. Take a shower first, you said. How come? Now, pants were on. I was reaching for a shirt. You are covered in blood. Ah, yeah. I said, remembering. I'll probably, you know, need a rabies shot. And you can fuck yourself from now on. And you laughed as the pillow hit the back of my head and my ear screamed a little in protest. Minutes later, I stepped into the hall, my hair wet and smelling of girly shampoo. Hey, it was on sale. Dave was leaning against the wall, pretending to read a book, and he smiled his malicious smile, and I had to laugh. You showered before you came out. It's a long story, Dave. You don't say. Ah, fuck. What?
Spook, my boy. After I first congratulate you on what sounded like the world's most amazing bout of coitus, I have the unwanted task of telling you that the whole damn neighborhood knows exactly how your lady friend feels your name should be said.
And how is that? I laughed.
With volume,
Dave said.
With volume and gusto. With longing and heat. With rapture and vigor. That's how your name shall be spoken in the halls of Valhalla and the windy plain of your domain.
Dave, is there any reason you sound like really shitty Homer?
Not a clue, really. Isn't this how I'm supposed to respond when I speak to a god?
What? I asked. Seriously, was it that loud?
Oh, it was that loud.
Okay, I said. Shit. I started down the stairs, Dave in tow.
Where are we headed?
I gotta get the wife a latte, I answered.
When is Lady Danger leaving?
When she's done with the latte, I imagine. She's not much on post-coitus affection. Why do you ask?
Just wanted to talk.
You okay, sir? I asked.
No. As a matter of fact, no. Not really.
Okay. I'll be over to your place as soon as she is gone.
Good.
And off he went, getting into his car, driving away without looking back. Two houses down. I laughed, turned the other way, and headed off to the coffee shop. Now, men have a way of toning down emotional intensity in any given situation. We seem to be incapable of discussing a heavy emotional issue without turning every fifth line into a punchline or a dick joke. And it's not denial or even fear. It's just hard to explain. We just do it. Being uncomfortable with our feelings has a lot to do, I guess, with the way we were raised. Dave's saying we were loud, though, said a lot about his emotional state. It meant that he'd stopped by to talk last night, and I'd been busy being happy. His being awake and waking me in the subtlest way he could manage meant that what he had to talk about was actually quite important. The fact that he told me he needed to talk meant that he was fucked up about something and that I'd best not fuck around getting back to him. Or hell, maybe we were that loud. I hurried anyway. When I came back in, you were already dressed, and I stood there by my desk, watching you in the mirror until you turned and caught me. You smiled. What are you looking at?
Just some sort of vision, I answered.
Oh, really? A vision? Did it have to be a vision?
Why is that? You asked.
Well, let's be honest. Someone like you shouldn't have anything to do with someone like me. You are too beautiful, too tasty, too much. I am too battered, too fucked up, too bent, too broken.
Don't talk like that, Spook, you said. It makes me sad.
I laughed the comment off, for your benefit, mine, I suppose. But it stuck in my head. What you had said struck me as random enough, vague enough, that I immediately started picking it apart and looking for all the hidden meanings. You grabbed up your latte, told me it was wrong, kissed me on the cheek, and sprinted out the door.
Bye, Danny,
I heard you call cheerfully.
See you later, Danger.
Dave bounded through the door, sniffing the air. There is the most definite sex funk in here, Spook.
Can I smell your sheets?
Feel free, Dave. Feel free. Dave looked around, then looked hard at me for a second.
Have I ever told you that I think she is very bad news?
Shit, Dave, I don't fucking care. And don't I fucking know it? So what do you want to talk about?
It's nothing, really. I just want to take you to lunch.
Okay, I said, ignoring the obvious lie.
Lunch where?
Titty bar.
Naturally.
hunted by the wolves and I was heckled by the crows. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know. Alongside my innocence, I laid in bed awake, conflicted and ashamed with the impetus of age. But like a phantom, she crept across the floor and out the window. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know. From his place on the mantle, my heart was taken down, scattered in a thousand little pieces on the ground. And I below a street lamp like an orphan with a halo. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know, 'cause it won't last. The worries will pass. All your troubles, they don't stand a chance. And sometimes it takes more than a lifetime to know. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know. Faith etched in stone, neither could comfort you from the wild unknown. So bury your burning hatred like a hatchet in the snow. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know. If you have a broken heart or a battered soul, find something to hold on to let go, to help you through the hard nights like a flask filled with hope. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know, 'cause it won't last. Your worries will pass. All your troubles that don't stand a chance. And it always hurts the worst when it's the ones we love the most. Darling, do not fear what you don't really know. What you don't really know. We said, darling, do not fear.